have a guest I'd like to bring on the air. He's an interesting fella from down in Illinois. Has a collection I'm very curious about. Corky Helms has been amassing a gigantic collection of anvils for decades now. Has more than 700 anvils. And I just wanted to talk to him about it. It's apparently something you can see at a heritage museum in a town I will not try and pronounce. I will simply go to
Muskoda.
Muskoda.
Correct.
Muskoda, Illinois. Muskoutah. Native tribe language are we looking at there, do you think?
It's the Muskoutan Indians.
Really?
Yep.
And they have a heritage museum there housing all 700 of your anvils?
No, they don't have all 700. We have probably about a third of them there. I did not take all of my large ones, and there's really not enough room to put all of them there. But I took a pretty good sample of what I have out there.
Corky, when I read about your anvil collection in the Chicago Sun-Times, I was, of course, waiting to get to the paragraph where they raised the question, why? Why anvils? And what intrigued me and made me want to bring you on the air was that at that point, you simply shrugged, and the reporter just passed that along to the reader. Just shrugged when asked, oh, why anvils? Is it really one of those things where you're not entirely sure what the hell you're doing?
Well, I think what happened, I'm a retired educator, but I also was shoeing horses, and I had one anvil that I had bought when I was in college shoeing horses, and my father-in-law gave me one, and I saw it had a name on it, and that kind of led me to thinking, I wonder what other kind of names there are. And that's kind of how the collection began.
You're talking about brand names?
Brand names, correct.
So you saw a brand name on an anvil, which isn't wildly unusual. I mean, someone has to make them, right?
Right.
So you saw that and you said, I wonder what other brands of anvils there are.
You bet. When I started with the first ones, I started haunting some auctions, and there were a tremendous amount of them that were made by, I didn't know if it was a man or a company, by the name of Peter Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. And come to find out, they were made in England, sold through Sears and Montgomery Ward catalogs in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and they must have brought them over by the boatload because they're distributed all over the world.
The thing that people, I'm sure, must ask with your anvil collection is, weren't there items that were lighter that you could have collected? What do these things weigh on average?
Well, my largest one weighs 416 pounds. But a lot of the smaller anvils are the ones that were given away as advertising, commemoratives, various museums and recreation spots.
You mean the same way someone might give away an ashtray in Las Vegas? Someone gave away anvils to advertise their business?
Yes, they did.
What would one do with that anvil?
They were probably just set on the desk, used for paperweights, that type of thing. And then there are anvils that were used by jewelers and opticians, opticians that made glasses. And just all kinds of things. There were also watchmaker anvils that were very much used all the time and still are used today.
When you started collecting these, was there a woman in your life?
Yep. Who is my present wife of 47 years.
And even though you started this with a woman in your life, there was no argument about, well, wait a minute, we're not going to have a place for those, and that's going to take up a lot of your time, and I'm going to have to tell other women about it, and that's going to be difficult?
No, not really. We live in the country, and so we have several outbuildings, and we have the bigger ones are stored in there, and the other ones are in cases.
Do you ever have people come from many states away absolutely fascinated by this collection and needing to see it before they die?
No. And this is the first time it's been shown in a museum. And there are several anvil collections throughout the United States.
There are?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know the other fellows?
Yes, as a matter of fact. I know one. The other one is in the other collection is in an agricultural museum in Kansas.
Huh. Now, when you talk to guys who also collect these things, do they seem a lot like you?
Yes. Yeah, they sure are. It makes for some interesting talking because we kind of compare where they were made and the shape that they're in and that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
There's kind of the person who is what sometimes referred to as the guru has written a book called Anvils in America, and the gentleman's name is Dick Postman, and he's from Berrien Springs, Michigan.
Do you happen to know how many of those books have sold?
I think it's in the third printing.
So possibly three?
No, I think there's probably, I imagine there's over 1,000 of them that are sold.
You have no intention of selling this collection?
Not at this time.
Mm-hmm.
No. Because there's still a lot of them that I would like to acquire.
There are. Despite the fact that you have more than 700, there are a lot you would still like to acquire.
Oh, yes. I mean, they're still being made today, and they're still being used today.
Is there an anvil, perhaps, that might be in Minnesota that you're looking for that someone listening may have?
You bet.
Give me an idea.
If they have any that are over 400 pounds, I'm interested. I'm still hunting for that 1,000-pound anvil.
Uh-huh. Any idea where that one might be?
No. Most of the great big ones like that were used in shipbuilding yards or railroad yards and places like that.
So say someone calls you from southern Florida and says, I got the 1,000-pounder. What are you going to do?
I'm going to get in my pickup truck and drive to Florida.
And get that thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Are there other guys who collect anvils who are all looking for the same anvil?
I don't know that they're looking for the same one.
Sort of the holy grail of anvils?
Yeah. No, they're probably looking for ones that they don't have in their collection.
Mm.
One that's a different kind, maybe one that has an overstrike on it. For example, Trenton made one that was called Black Prince. They made it for that company, and I happen to have a Black Prince that has a Trenton overstrike on it. Those are pretty unusual.
Has there ever been a convention?
There are a lot of blacksmith associations, and so there are conferences all over the country,
mm-hmm.
and I usually go to them.
Mm, you must be very popular there.
No, not really, because everybody there is a blacksmith,
uh-huh.
and they have.
But they don't have anything close to what you have.
Yeah, but I don't take them along. I don't take my collection along. I will take some pieces of equipment that I might want to sell or trade.
Do you have a photo album on your coffee table of different anvils for when people are visiting? They can page through and look at your anvils.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you have photographs of them?
No, we're working on that.
Oh, okay.
I think that might be in the future.
Tough to get them to sit still, I suppose.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
Yeah. And you're able to. When they're not in the museum, and part of the collection's in a museum right now, you're able to keep them in outbuildings on your property?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I was fascinated by this. I really have never understood the shape of an anvil.
Well,
I've been fascinated all my life by the shape and why it has to be that shape.
Well, it has to be that shape because it's the primary tool that's used to shape metal when it's hot. And so you need the round horn on the front of it to be able to bend it in a round manner. You need the square part so that if you want, you have that there. It has a hole in the back of it that's called a hardy hole. The hardy fits in it. These are tools that you use to work the metal. It might be to cut it off. It might be to put a piece of metal in and twist it and bend it. So there are a whole number of tools that go along with the anvil as well.
I asked my boy earlier today to go online for me and bring me anything he could find on the history of the anvil, and he came up with a stack of papers 30, 40, 50 pages thick.
Oh, yeah.
And that was some good reading. Got a fella calling here who has a question for you. I'm sure it'll be a good one. Darwin? Darwin? I picked up line 2 instead of line 1. I'm sorry. Why'd I do that? Let me try again. Darwin?
Yes, now I'm here. Thank you. Sir, how do you keep the rust off? Do you use a light coat of oil or do you spray them with Cosmoline?
I've tried several different things. In many cases, they just rust. But a lot of times what I will do, if I like the ones that I have in the museum now, I took them and cleaned them off and then just took a spray can of clear coat and just put that over it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that would work too good, too. Okay, very interesting. Thank you.
Sure, a lot of calls coming. Welcome. A lot of calls coming in on the anvils. Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know, I got a question about, I was wondering if he had any anvils that were made from the Roebling Wire Company.
Do you, sir?
What's the name of the oil company?
It's the Roebling Wire Company?
Yeah, yeah. Roebling, they were Roebling Wire Company.
You ever heard of the Roebling Wire Company, Corky?
I think I've heard of it, but I do not have one of those anvils.
Do you have one, Mr. Caller, sir?
No, I don't have one, but I just read the making of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do have one from the Brooklyn Bridge.
He has one from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Well, yeah. I actually don't have one, Tommy.
Oh.
I was just curious if this Roebling Wire Company, they've made all the wires for the Brooklyn Bridge and stuff, and I was sitting there thinking, geez, I wonder if Roebling made some of those.
Can I ask you a serious question? Are you honestly curious about that?
Yeah, I really was.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how curious are you, say?
7 or 8. I mean,
okay.
I just read the book, so it's kind of fresh in my mind, you know?
Okay, interesting.
I have never heard of one. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, because there are quite a number that are out there that I have never seen.
Do you know, sir, that as soon as I started taking calls, the phones went crazy, and everyone out there has questions about anvils. Do you get that a lot?
Yeah, I sure do.
Huh.
And amazingly enough, a lot of times, like at the museum when I'm out there, there are a lot of people come in and said, you know, I knew there were anvils, but I didn't know there was this much material on them.
Yeah. Hey, here's Jim from Lake Elmo with a question on anvils.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as the alloys go, I'm wondering, as the things are older, if they had different alloys in them to work the metal, like when you think of old farm equipment, was that more malleable, hence easier to use?
What they did with a lot of them, they were wrought iron, and they were poured, and then they put a steel plate on the top of them, and when they hit the metal, it was on that steel plate because the wrought iron wouldn't last as long. And in some cases, a company in Brooklyn, New York, by the name of Hay Budden, they were one of the leading American companies that went out of business in 1925. But theirs were actually forged steel. They used a huge air hammer to shape the metal.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, thank you for that. Kenny calling with an anvil question. Go ahead, Ken.
I have a couple questions. I'm in the market for an anvil. What size do I look for? A 100-pounder? Is that good for just a do-it-yourselfer?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And what you want to do is be sure you put it on a log, on some kind of a stump, that you can firm it down pretty good so it won't walk on you.
Sure, and now I plan on buying one at a an auction. How much am I going to be spending at a local auction?
That depends on whether I'm there or not.
I mean, am I talking $60 or $20 or $100? What's the deal?
It'll range. If it's kind of an unusual one and there's a collector there, he may give up to $3 a pound for it. Normally, you can buy them. You know, you can buy them anywhere from $1 a pound to $2.50 a pound.
They actually sell them by the pound.
No, they don't sell them by the pound. But you know, if you have a 100-pound anvil and it brings $250, you know.
Well, wait.
Gotcha.
So a 100-pound anvil, what Kenny's looking for, could cost him a couple $100.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of the basic reasons is there are a lot of hobbyists like Kenny out there who want to do some some blacksmith work in their backyard and play a little bit. And there are a lot of blacksmiths who are making a full-time living doing artwork with blacksmith.
Sure.
Okay, hang up on me now, Tom.
Okay, there goes Kenny. He's actually our traffic guy, and he's dead serious. He wants an anvil. I can tell that it's not a gag.
Good.
Yep. So let's see here. Rod, go ahead with your anvil question.
I have an anvil that's now in two pieces.
How'd that happen, Rod?
My grandfather beat on this for probably 40 years. My father beat on it with things that you wouldn't believe, like a sledgehammer. And one day I'm working on out in the garage with a little ball-peen hammer, and I'm just tapping something, straightening it out, and it cracked, and it literally cracked in half. And it wasn't like pre-cracked or anything. I cannot for the life of me understand what would cause that.
Well, what happens a lot of times when some of those anvils were made, they were actually made in two or three pieces and then forge welded together. And so what probably happened over a long period of time with heating and cooling and everything else, you know, that one day that you hit it, that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Even though I was using just a hammer that was a few ounces.
Yeah. At some point, I think you could have dropped a maple leaf on it if you found its weak spot. I'll tell you a solution, and maybe you know about this, Corky, Gorilla Glue.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, it's a lot of times what a lot of the old times blacksmiths would do, they would take a sad iron, one of the old metal irons, and they would heat it and set it on the anvil when it was real cold, so it would absorb some heat, so when they started working on it, they wouldn't be hitting it cold.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, that might explain it.
Yeah, I think you hit her cold.
Okay, that was a 20-year-old question I had.
No.
Okay.
Well, you can sleep tonight.
Glad I could answer it for you.
That's great. Boy, the calls just keep coming in on the anvils here. Craig?
Tommy had a question.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who was a metal worker, and he told me a story that they had filled an anvil with gunpowder and then put another anvil on top of it and put a fuse to it, and he said they blew it 30 feet in the air.
It's an old fraternity
I was wondering if
prank.
That's possible.
Yep.
You can actually get them up to 125 feet in the air.
Corky, have you done that?
Never.
Then how do you know?
Because I've seen pictures of them. Mm-hmm. I've never done it. I've never been around anybody that did. It is kind of dangerous.
Have you ever heard of people using them for skeet shooting?
Nope, not a bit.
Okay.
But they use basically a specific kind of anvil, which is a Trenton, which has a hollowed out part in the base.
Uh-huh.
And they put one upside down and then fill it with gunpowder, put clay around it, and that's what they use.
Why do they do that?
That was before fireworks in some of the older communities and stuff in the late 1800s. That's what they did for the 4th of July.
Sent anvils up in the air.
Yeah, it's called shooting the anvil.
I see. Chris calling in with an anvil question. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, this is a question that's been begging to ask, and that guy has been waiting 20 years. I've probably been waiting since I've been six to ask this question. Is there really an Acme Anvil Company, and was their best customer Wile E. Coyote?
Acme did make one. I happen to have an Acme, and it was made by the Trenton Company for Acme anvils.
Did you ever learn why in the Roadrunner so often the coyote was dealing with an anvil falling on his head?
Have no idea.
Be interesting to learn why they chose an anvil.
Yeah, there is a guy in New York who collects anvils, and his basic beginning was because he was a Wile E. Coyote fan, and so he began collecting as a result of it.
And you thought that was a joke of a question, Misty.
Yeah, I did. Actually, I thought this whole interview was going to be a joke, but it clearly is not. Corky, I know you have to run. I appreciate so much your time, and thanks for being on very short notice, and my best to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
appreciate
bye-bye.
It.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. We'll be back.